Thank you for coming. So I was thinking about that. I've been thinking about this for a little bit of time, doing a Sitter Insider live. I'm sure you're all aware that I do this Sitter Insider every Monday and Thursday on WhatsApp, and I was thinking about doing a Sitter Insider live. And when I first thought about it, I was there I am. When I first thought about it, I was thinking about doing it, like live and in person around the table. But then there was something about this technological aspect that I wanted to preserve. So I figured I really have shied away from Zoom. This was a good opportunity to try a Zoom share. So with that, let's hop right into the Yom Kippur Maaser. So in the next 20 or 30 minutes or so, I want to look at two aspects of the Maaser. The first aspect I want to look at is something that applies also to Rosh Hashanah, something that we can, if we remember, we can think about come next Rosh Hashanah as well. And the second one is very unique only to Yom Kippur. So the first I want to talk about is the prayer that we say during the Chazan's repetition of Musaf right before Kedusha of Unasana Tokef. Unasana Tokef Kedusha Sayom, where we ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to relate the power of the day to us. Tell us about how sanctified this day is. And a lot of the information I'm about to quote, I got from Rabbi J.J. Schachter, who is an incredible scholar, someone I've had the opportunity to learn from both live and in person. He gives the second day drasha on Rosh Hashanah in my in-law's shul. And in YU, I got to learn from him, and also on YU Torah. He is a wealth of information, and it's amazing the things that he has discovered, including this. So, Unasana Tokef, if you look in the Art Scroll Machzer, whether you look in the Rosh Hashanah Machzer, whether you look in the Yom Kippur Machzer, you see the same story. And the legend is as follows. It comes from an Or Zeruah, and in the Or Zeruah writes that there was a great rabbi, Rav Amnon of Mainz. Mainz was one of the great communities in Germany of the time. And he was being pressured by the archbishop to convert to Christianity. And the archbishop had him alone in a room and he said, "Become Christian." So he did what he thought was a smart thing to do. He knew that if he said no on the spot, it would be sudden death. So he said, "Let me think about it. I'm going to take a few days. I'm going to go home. I'm going to think about it. I'll come back and I'll give you an answer." So he went home. He had no intention of ever thinking about it. And he was hoping maybe the archbishop would get caught up with something else. Maybe he would forget about it. And that would be the end of that. He would never hear about this ever again. Well, the archbishop didn't forget. And 3 days later, very upset, he sent one of his generals to bring Rav Amnon back. And so he had Rav Amnon in the room and he said, "You thought about it? What do you say?" Rav Amnon said, apologized. He's like, "I'm so sorry. I'm not going to do it." And he gave him a solution. He told the archbishop, "Cut out my tongue. My tongue that spoke wrongly. It said that I would think about it. It said that I would come back. It said that I won't convert. Cut out my tongue." Rav Amnon had a different idea. He said, "I'm not going to cut out your tongue." He said, "I'm going to cut off your limbs." He started with his feet. Cut off one foot, then the other foot. And in a really gruesome story, he went for the fingers. One finger, two fingers, until he was laying on a shield, Rav Amnon, with all of his limbs around him, his fingers next to his hands, and his feet next to his legs. And he was brought home. And so he was carried home on this shield with his limbs beside him. And came Rosh Hashanah, he asked to be brought to the shul. And he laid in front of the Aron Kodesh, he laid in front of the Sifrei Torah, and he said the words of Unasana Tokef. He said these really stirring words about the Kedushas Yom, the power of the day, and who will live, and who will, the opposite of live, as Rav J.J. Schachter likes to always say. And then he passed away. And it was 3 days after that, he came to another great rabbi in the community, Rav Kalonymus, and he told him this entire story. He told him the prayer of Unasana Tokef, and he told him, teach the communities this prayer. Not only the community of Mainz, teach the other communities in Gullis this prayer. And so according to the story that we have in the Or Zeruah that that's written in the footnotes by Rabbi Artscroll, so this is how we got Unasana Tokef. This is where it came from. And it's a really stirring story, it's a really powerful story, but there's two problems with the story. Problem number one is Rav Amnon of Mainz, we have no proof that he existed. There's no writings about a Rav Amnon who lived in the 11th century. We can't prove it. Which is not earth-shattering. It could have been that there was a Rav Amnon of Mainz who we can't prove existed. I'm sure one day there will be a Noah Wittenberg of San Diego that we can't prove existed. But we can't prove it. And the reason that might be a problem is if he is as significant as we're saying, so there should be something somewhere that talks about a Rav Amnon who lived in the 11th century, who lived in Mainz. The bigger problem, though, is the Cairo Geniza. The Cairo Geniza, obviously, as its name suggests, it was found in Cairo, and it was all these different Jewish texts, and they go from the 9th century to the 19th century. And they found a text in there that has the Unasana Tokef on it. And by dating it back, it was clearly before the 11th century. So therefore, this story, it might have happened, but Unasana Tokef existed before the story ever happened. It was clearly in the world that Unasana Tokef was being stated, was being put in the Machzor. So just to... so that we go home with some answers, I'll tell you what we think probably happened. What we think probably happened is someone named Yanai probably is the one who wrote the Unasana Tokef. He probably wrote it somewhere between the 4th and the 7th century. Yanai is known as being the Rav, as being the Rebbe, the personal teacher of Rebbe Elazar HaKalir. And Rebbe Elazar HaKalir is known to us because whether we know the name or not, we use a lot of his works in the Kinos on Tisha B'Av. And so on Tisha B'Av, at least the first half, if not more, of the Kinos written by Rabbi Elazar Kalir, and his Rebbe, also a poet, also very good with words, wrote this very powerful prayer of Unasana Tokef. And so then what probably happened was he probably wrote it in Eretz Yisrael. And we know from Chazal, we also know from history, that after the Churban Bayis Rishon, after the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, a lot of the Jews were taken from Eretz Yisrael and they went to Italy. They were taken to Italy. And so this prayer probably went with them from Eretz Yisrael to Italy. And that's probably where it was distributed amongst the rest of the Jewish communities that were in Gaulis. But here's what I want to take away from this story, from this legend, and from the questions we have on it. When I always talk about my second date with Yaffa, my wife, and how it was the second date that really sealed it. And what I did was I took her to this mini golf place that I found out while we were there, like every other guy she had dated took her to. Because we walk in, I was like, where's the first hole? And she's like, oh, it's this way. I was like, oh, gosh. But I did it different because I brought questions. And so as we were going through, whoever did worse on the hole, they scored a higher number. They had to answer a question. And one of the questions I remember clearly was, what was your favorite book that you read in high school? Because I had a favorite book that I read in high school. And Yaffa did not. She really did not. She remembered one book because she remembered watching the movie. And she remembered that she answered the questions on the test based on the movie, and she did really well. But I said Of Mice and Men was my favorite book. But there's another book I remember very clearly, and that was The Things They Carried by Tim O'Brien. And in that book, he talks about his experience in the Vietnam War. And there's one chapter that really sticks out to me, where he was giving a public reading. He was at a bookstore, and he was talking about a buffalo. And I don't remember the exact details of this part of the story. I think he and the other soldiers actually killed this buffalo and ate the buffalo. And after he had told this story in the bookstore, a woman came up to him afterwards and she said to him, there's no way that story's true. Is it? Are those facts really true? Did that really happen? And his answer always stuck with me. He said, lady, if the facts are true or not is not the point. They might be true, they might not be true. I might have gotten it 100% correct, I might be 85% correct. He said, but I'll tell you one thing. The emotions of all of my stories are 100% true. And so I think that is the same with Unasana Tokef. Is the legend true or not? Maybe, or maybe not. And the legend help gives it some depth, but really the emotions are true. And that's something that we really connect to. And I think that's the reason why during Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur of 2020, when we were tearing apart the matzah, we took so much out to try to make davening as quick as possible, Unasana Tokef always stayed in. I don't know what, a single community that didn't say Unasana Tokef. And it's not because of the legend behind it, but it's because of the emotions in it. And there are two really major themes in Unasana Tokef. The first is, as the first words suggest, Unasana Tokef Kedushas Yom, relate to us the power of the day. It's the weight of the day and how serious we have to take ourselves on this day. Even though sometimes it's a healthy thing to look at our shortcomings and not dwell on them. If we could really get so caught up in our shortcomings from time to time. But on Yom Kippur, on Rosh Hashanah, it's a good thing to take more time, to take it a little bit more seriously, to think about it a little bit more. But I think the other theme, and it's something that I'm sure we can connect to right now, considering the recent events in our community, is how fragile, what a gift life is. And how we hope for tomorrow, but we're never sure. And so I think theme number two is something that we connect with more. So I just want to talk a little bit more about theme number one, the weight of the day, how important Yom Kippur is, and how we should be taking ourselves a little bit more seriously on this day as well. There's a Gemara in Brachos, Chav Ches Amud Beis, 28b. It's a Gemara I love to quote. It's a Gemara I love to think about. And the story, it's, I don't know if this one's a true story or not. I don't know. I hope it's a true story. And the story is that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was on his deathbed. He saw the end of life coming. And his Talmidim and his students came to visit him. And they asked him, Rebbe, before you go, give us a bracha. Give us one last piece of wisdom. And so he said to them, you should fear God the way you fear man. And underwhelmed, the student said to him, Ad Kan? That's it? That's the best Rebbe can do for us at the end of his life? And he said, think about it. When a person does something they know they're not supposed to, when they do an aveira, when they make a mistake, what do they say? They say, I hope no one saw me. I hope no one saw me. But do we think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu that way? Do we think about God that way? He's always watching. But do we think, I hope Hashem didn't see me? If we thought about it seriously, we'd know that He does see us. He absolutely knows what's happening. And so, on Yom Kippur, it's good to consider that fact that we really are always in the spotlight. We might not think about it always, but when I was preparing, I was thinking maybe that's why Yom Kippur davening is so long. It's not for us to space out and think about what we're going to eat after davening's over. Maybe it's so that we can take time to think about these ideas seriously. Things that kind of get pushed under the rug when life gets so busy, when there's so much going on. And that way we can internalize it and take it with us into the rest of the year. So to conclude this first section, regardless of the exact background of Unasana Tokef, if the story's real, if the story's not real, I think the emotions are definitely real. It's something we connect to, and hopefully it's something that can help elevate our year. If we think about it and we take time to ponder it and show it, it's something that can help push us forward as we go away from Yom Kippur, away from Aseret Yemei Teshuva, away from this time of introspection, make it part of our daily lives. So the other thing I want to speak about, and I said this is very unique just to Yom Kippur, is the Vidoy. So the Mishnah Berurah tells us that on Yom Kippur, between Erev Yom Kippur and the end of Yom Kippur, we're going to say Vidoy 10 times. We're going to say it 5 times individually. We're going to say it 5 times communally. And the Rambam lists Vidoy as being one of the essential pieces of tshuva. In order to do tshuva, you have to regret it. You have to do Vidoy, you have to admit your shortcomings, and then you have to do a Kabbalah, you have to accept that going forward, I'm not going to do this ever again. Because human nature is that we're going to rationalize our behaviors. And like I said before, it's not always a bad thing to rationalize our behaviors. It helps us psychologically function. But at the same time, it's important sometimes to be real, be honest, and think more deeply. And so that's what tshuva is all about. It's about taking that deeper thought and thinking about it a little more real sense. So based on that, we would assume that when we look at the vidoy, it would all be in the singular. We would say, ashamti, I'm guilty, and begadti, and I've betrayed, and etc. But instead, we say it in the plural. Asham knew that we are guilty, and begad knew that we have betrayed. And so the question I want to deal with is there something communal about tshuva? Someone else has to say sorry for me to get forgiveness, or I have to say sorry for them to get forgiveness? And we could ask the same question on the Shemona Esrei we say every single day. We say, Salach lanu, mechal lanu. We ask to be forgiven, all of us. It's not Salach li, mechal li. We don't ask personally, but communally. And so I had the following thought. We have a concept in Judaism. It's also a concept in Halacha. And it's this idea that Kol Yisrael Arevim Ze Lazeh, that all Jews are guarantors. We're all responsible for one another. And in Halacha, this comes up. It comes up quite a bit during this time of the year, but it comes up really every day of the year. Let's say on Shabbos, you made Kiddush, you heard Kiddush, and someone comes in who hasn't heard Kiddush, who hasn't made Kiddush, and they don't know how to make Kiddush. So the halacha is that you can make the entire Kiddush for them. You can take a new cup of wine, a new cup of grape juice, and say every single word of Kiddush that you've already made, that you've already heard for that person. Because the Gemara says that if they haven't heard it, it's as if you haven't fulfilled your mitzvah. Because Kol Yisrael, Reven Ze Lazeh, we're all responsible for one another. And so, based on this, I was thinking the same might be true in terms of the Vidoy, in terms of admitting our shortcomings. Being as communal as we are, I mean, especially us who are very communal, but also outside of Judaism, who's not so communal all the time, there is a sense to learn from other people. We see their actions, and we take from them. Or they see our actions, and they take from us. And so we tend to rationalize based on that. We say, okay, I saw someone do such and such, so it must be okay. Or I heard someone speak Lashon Hara, and if they can do it, I can do it. And that happens all the time. We rationalize, we justify, we learn from other people. And so maybe that's exactly what we're saying on Yom Kippur. When we say Ashamnu, Begadnu, when we're apologizing communally, we're saying not only am I admitting my shortcomings, the things that I wish I could have done better this past year, the things I hope to do better this upcoming year, but we're also saying that I'm sorry for anyone who learned from me, anyone who took my bad example, and they said, if they can do it, I can do it too. And I'll tell you, this is something that I particularly feel the weight of my shoulder on my shoulders. Because you get, once your first name changes from whatever it was to rabbi, so then whatever you do, people say, okay, if they can do it, I can do it. If they can say that, I can say that. When I came here, I used to learn during davening. I loved to learn during davening. It was such a great time to learn because nobody was going to disturb me. I wasn't going to get any phone calls or any text messages, especially on Shabbos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. But then I realized listening to Rabbi Bogopolsky that it's really not, and he wasn't even talking directly to me. He was talking to everyone, but it's just, you know, people learn from it. They, especially when you stand up in the front, they see what you're doing and they're going to say, okay, if he can do that, then I can do something else. I can read a newspaper. I can talk with my friends. I'm very fond of quoting Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and I've used the same quote multiple times. So I'm just going to give you the gist of it right now. He says that a person can change the world if they change themselves. Because what happens, a person who changes themselves, so then their family will be influenced by that, and hopefully their community will be influenced by that, and hopefully that one community will influence other communities, and eventually enough influence, you can go ahead and change the world. Because we learn from other people. We're influenced by what they do. We see what they do, and we say, I want to do that. Bein l'tov, bein l'meitiv. Whether it's good or whether it's better, whether it's things we should be doing or things we shouldn't be doing. And so if you think about it, if we just influenced a fraction of our social circle, we would make a ginormous impact on the Jewish world. If we all influenced 5-10 people with some positive change we made, and they all went ahead and influenced 5-10 people with a positive change that they made, and it goes out and out and out, eventually we're going to change the entire Jewish world. We'll get to the people who live in Eretz Yisrael. We'll get to the people who speak both English and Hebrew. We'll get to all the Hebrew speakers. We'll change everyone. And the same can be said if we teach the wrong thing. If we have a negative influence, it could go out and out and out. So to conclude this second section, I think that's exactly what we're saying when we say the vidoy on Yom Kippur. When we say Ashamnu Begadnu, when we talk in the plural, we're talking about not only our shortcomings, but the way that we have influenced others. People have seen us and they have said, I want to do that too. And so when we express that on Yom Kippur, we're saying, not only do I hope to have a better year, not only do I hope to right my wrongs, do I hope to do better with my relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, but I hope to also be that positive influence who can have a real deep effect on the Jewish world in the long term. And you don't have to be the Gadol Hador to do it, as I explained. You don't have to be the greatest Jewish personality out there. You can be an average person. And just by making that positive effect and the ripples that that has, it can have a ginormous effect on the entire Jewish world. So, to summarize really quick, we spoke first about the prayer of Unasana Tokef, the power and the emotion that that prayer has, and why it's so important to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, whether or not the story that we know about it is true. And then we spoke about the Vidoy and how our negative influence can have such a large effect, but also how our positive influence can also have such a large effect on those around us, the community around us, and the entire Jewish world. So with that, I want to thank everyone again for joining me tonight, and I want to wish you all a Gemar Chasima Tova. A very...